Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, welcoming you once again to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, right here on Progressive Radio Network. One of the great things about Progressive Radio Network is that you can listen anytime, day or night. We're on live with The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m., and that is New York time. But the shows are then archived, so you can catch them again at your leisure. And you can find them at prn.com on the archives. You can also find us at Natural Nurse or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. So again, thank you so much for joining us today. Our guest today is Dr. Tom O'Brien. And Dr. O'Brien is an internationally recognized leader specializing in the complications of non-celiac gluten sensitivity, as well as celiac disease and the development of autoimmune diseases as they occur inside and outside of the intestines. He is a clinician specializing in treating chronic disease and metabolic disorders from a functional medicine perspective. Dr. O'Brien holds teaching faculty positions with the Institute of Functional Medicine and the National University of Health Sciences and has helped to train thousands of practitioners around the world in advanced understanding of the impact of food-related disorders and the development of individual autoimmune disease. On today's show, we will discuss many topics with Dr. O'Brien and let you know that his new book is out, which is called The Autoimmune Fix. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, isn't the world amazing? You are all the way very far away. Where are you calling in from?
Yes, we are on our honeymoon in Costa Rica.
Oh, congratulations. I love Costa Rica.
Oh,
enjoy.
Thank you.
What
yes.
A great place for that. And I'm happy that you were able to join us, even though you are far away today.
Thank you.
So you have written extensively, even before writing the book, The Autoimmune Fix. And what brought you to have an interest in this particular topic, Dr. O'Brien?
Well, that's a good question. It started 37 years ago when I was an intern, and my ex and I could not get pregnant. I called the seven most famous holistic doctors I'd ever heard of at that point and asked them what they all would do for infertility, and they told me what they do. I put a program together. We were pregnant in 6 weeks. My neighbors in married housing, we lived on campus, asked if I'd work with them. They had been through artificial insemination. Nothing had worked. And I said, well, sure, of course. They were pregnant in 3 months. So we were hot to trot before I even got out in practice to help every couple get pregnant that wanted to get pregnant. And there's not much in medicine that's an all or every, but this is an every. Every person clinically that I would see, every person that had some type of an hormone irregularity, whether it was an inability to get pregnant, recurrent miscarriages, estrogen dominance, fibrocystic breasts, low testosterone, whatever the condition was, if it was hormone related, every single one of those people had a food sensitivity. They were eating a food regularly that they didn't know was a problem for them. And that got me interested in the whole world of how foods can have an impact on things besides your stomach. And since then, of course, there have been literally tens of thousands of articles on this big kahuna topic, as I refer to it. Everything from attention deficit to Alzheimer's to rheumatoid arthritis to liver dysfunction to gut problems to psoriasis to multiple sclerosis. There is no imbalance in the human body that may not be being fueled and made worse by what you're eating, what's on the end of your fork. There's no condition that may not be be made worse because of what you're eating. And the lucky people are the ones who feel sick when they eat a food. If they still eat it, knowing that they're going to be sick, that's up to them. You know, whatever you want to do, man. But the unlucky ones are those that don't get stomach problems when they eat a food. It manifests 3 days later as a kidney infection or as gallbladder pain or headaches or some other manifestation that it's not easy to attribute what you're suffering is related to what you ate yesterday or the day before.
That's so true. It's interesting that you brought up that you first found that this is helpful for infertility, because I worked as a nutritionist in a fertility practice in Manhattan, and the doctor was so thrilled with the outcome. What I found was when I interviewed the couples, you know, they're really a very easy client group to work with, because of course they're not, thank God, they're not the sick and dying. They're not on their last legs with cancer and AIDS.
Right.
They
right.
are starting out in life. They feel they have enough money. They're in a relationship. They're in a happy and healthy place in most areas of their life to even be in a position to want to bring a baby into the world. And certainly they have financial means if they're in a fertility practice, because that is not cheap. So I found they very easily turned around just by changing diet. Some of them in their 30s had never eaten anything healthy ever in their whole entire life and were eating wheat products and toxic chemicals every single day.
Yes, yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, here's a classic example. You know, when a couple mates and a man ejaculates, millions of sperm are swimming up the canal. How come only one sperm, or two maybe, penetrate the egg? It's because millions of sperm hit the egg, but only one or two can get in. It's because when the sperm hits the egg, there is an enzyme secreted from the head of the sperm that hits the egg. That enzyme dissolves a little bit of the mucus that's around the egg. That mucus is like a force field. Keeps anything from getting in. But the enzyme dissolves a little bit of that mucus so the sperm can then swim right through, and that activates genes inside that shuts down the mucus layer. Nothing else can get through. So that's the mechanism of how sperm get inside the egg. That enzyme in the head of the sperm, secreted in the head of the sperm when it hits the egg, is completely zinc dependent. So if a man has a zinc insufficiency or a zinc deficiency, he's firing duds. And the only test that's done for men in most fertility clinics is to look at the sperm count and the sperm motility, how well they swim. That's the only test they do. And guys are really nervous. You know, they get this test done. They have to come back for their results. And they're all kind of shy and nervous and don't know what's going to happen here. And then they're told that their tests are normal. Their chest kind of puffs up a little bit, and they look at their wives and say, well, must be you, honey. And then the doctor starts injecting all these hormones into a woman that doesn't have a hormone deficiency. But they're shotgunning, trying to find a way to get through to help the couple get pregnant. My point is, when you give those men zinc, within a few weeks, and I've had three or four couples over the years, I just gave the guy the zinc, didn't even do anything with the woman, and they were pregnant within a month, 6 weeks. So nutrition has a great role to play in every single function in our bodies, everything.
That's so true. So that is so different, because your approach, and I imagine you review it in your new book, is really to consider nutritional deficiencies in every patient and, of course, do a food history.
You know, if a patient is suffering with some type of degenerative disease, some type of autoimmune disease, you can just about count on there are nutritional deficiencies. You can count on it. It's rough to say in all or in every, but I can't recall a case that didn't have as a component of what was going on for them. They weren't getting enough protein. They had amino acid deficiencies. They weren't getting enough of the good fats. The good fats make up 40% of the walls of your brain cells. Do you know how your brain cells communicate to each other? It's like a lazy Susan. You know, and if you went into a doctor's office 30, 40 years ago, you go in the bathroom to give a urine sample, and you put the cup with the urine in it on this little lazy Susan, and it swings around in the wall, and the nurse gets it on the other side of the wall from the bathroom. That lazy Susan. Our brain cells operate on lazy Susans. And the lazy Susans are controlled by the fats that make up the lazy Susan. If you're eating a diet full of French fries and deep fried foods, and you're not getting enough of the good fats, your lazy Susans get rusty and you can't communicate brain cell to brain cell very well. That's why you look at the studies and you see when you give these kids the fish oils, the good fats, within 3 to 6 months, their IQ goes up. They perform better in school. It's because their brains are working better. So we are made out of vitamins and minerals and nutrients and fats, proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. So it just makes sense. You put cheap gas in a Ferrari, it's going to run like a Rambler. And that's what's happening in our bodies today.
Well, certainly, with all your experience, you found a lot of information about autoimmune conditions. And what are some of those that people might recognize?
Oh, you know, autoimmunity means when your immune system is attacking your own tissue. And the common autoimmune diseases that we've heard of are multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, Alzheimer's has an autoimmune mechanism, Parkinson's has an autoimmune mechanism, celiac disease. There are over 300 autoimmune mechanisms going on in the body that can go on in the body where your immune system starts attacking your own tissue and your joints get destroyed or your skin gets damaged and you've got psoriasis or you're losing your hair. It's called alopecia. It just depends. If Mrs. Patient, if you pull at a chain, the chain always breaks at the weakest link. It's at one end, the middle, the other end. It's your heart, your brain, your liver, your kidneys. Wherever your genetic weak link is, you pull on the chain, that's where it's going to break. And so the question, when you have a body that's not working right, the first thing you want to do, of course we want the symptoms to go down or go away. Of course we do. But we have to stop pulling on the chain that's causing the symptoms. Or if you take a drug to mask a symptom, that problem is just going to manifest somewhere else down the road in many, many people. So it's great to take something to get rid of your pain or to calm down the mechanism that's going on. But we also have to look at, where's this coming from? That's why when you look at the autoimmune mechanisms, your immune system is like the dashboard in your car. If you look at the immune system, you can see where the problems are, where your cells are being damaged or destroyed. And you can identify this years before there's so much damage that that tissue now doesn't work very well, and then here come the symptoms. Every doctor knows. No one gets Alzheimer's in their 60s or 70s. You get Alzheimer's in your 20s or 30s. It's a decades-long process of slowly killing off your brain cells, slowly killing them off. Cell by cell by cell by cell. You keep throwing gasoline on the fire and the weak link in the chain is your brain. You keep killing off those brain cells and you're heading down the path. You know, there's no drug that's going to fix Alzheimer's. That'll never happen. Dr. Dale Bredesen runs the Buck Institute. That's the Alzheimer's Research Center at UCLA. He published the paper in November of 2014, the first paper ever, reversing Alzheimer's, completely reversing it in 9 out of 10 people. Took 5 years, and there were 37 points on the checklist, but 9 out of 10. And just a few months ago, he had his first ever weekend conference for doctors about how he does this. There were 300 doctors in attendance, and now he has over 100 people that have completely reversed. They are stopped, arrested, and reversed their Alzheimer's or their Parkinson's or their dementia. Over 100. So, but the first point to understand is that these things don't happen overnight. They're going on for decades under the surface, and you don't feel bad when the antibodies from your immune system are attacking your thyroid. Or you don't feel bad when the antibodies are attacking your brain. You can't feel it when you're killing off cerebellum cells. But the main reason why people in their 60s and 70s can't dance up and down the stairs, but they could in their 30s, is because their brain's been being destroyed. The area of the brain that controls muscle balance is called the cerebellum. And the cerebellum shrinks in people as we age if you have antibodies to your cerebellum. And 26% of the people in our practice who had antibodies, meaning the immune system was fighting wheat, if you had antibodies to wheat, 26% of those people also had antibodies to the cerebellum, killing off their cerebellum one cell at a time. You can't feel that when it's happening. Until you've killed off so many cerebellar cells over the years, now you notice, oh, my balance isn't good as it used to be. I'm just getting older. No, you're getting a smaller cerebellum. And so when you look at the dashboard of your body, when you look at the immune system to see what's cooking here, what's going on here, you can see if you have elevated antibodies killing off your thyroid or killing off your brain or killing off your joints or killing off your skin. And when you see that test result and you say, but I feel fine, my brain is fine or my skin is fine, what you've done is you've identified the mechanism before there's so much damage that it's obvious. And when you identify the mechanism that's going on, it gives you that window of opportunity to do something about it. And what do you do? Well, the first thing you do is you ask the question, how am I throwing gasoline on the fire? What am I doing causing inflammation? And the most common thing that people are doing, or just like you said earlier in the show, is that when you had patients coming into you in their 30s, they had never eaten a healthy food in their life. They're
yeah,
just eating
amazing?
Ding-dongs and ho-hos. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it's when you take a food diary and they don't know. They think they're eating healthy because they're eating, you know, McDonald's for breakfast, which they're told has protein, and they're eating bologna sandwiches for lunch and some frozen thing for dinner. They think they're eating healthy. And these are people who really are educated and should know better.
That's right. That's right. They should know better, but unfortunately, they grew up in the era where a lot of their waking hours are in front of a screen, whether it's a television or a laptop or an iPhone, but they're in front of a screen and they're being bombarded by all the messages that the commercial industry wants you to hear about how milk is a natural and build strong bodies 12 ways. And these are the best hot dogs at ball games and you know, the good life is drinking Coca-Cola and all the other stuff that we keep getting inundated with into our brains when we're kids and young minds growing up and developing. So we think we're eating healthy. We think we're taking our care of ourselves, but it doesn't make sense. How come I've got a nodule on my thyroid if I'm eating healthy and I'm 34 years old? How come that's happening? Well, that doesn't make sense. Okay, let's cut the thyroid out and get the doctor says cut it out and get rid of it. No. Maybe you have to do that, or maybe you can reverse the nodules by changing how you're feeding your body. And there are many studies talking about that particular topic, that you can stop the development of nodules and they can get smaller once again if you change what you're putting in your body. The highest inflammatory thing you can do, where you get more gasoline on the fire than anywhere else, is what's on the end of your fork. And it requires some time to learn, how do I feed this body like a Ferrari instead of like an old Volkswagen? How do I take care of this body in such a way that it purrs and it's going to purr for me for many years to come? That's a whole journey. That's why shows like yours are so important, is that, you know, people hear this, they're driving to work, they're on the train commuting into work. Maybe they'll listen to it again, say, oh, that was interesting. And maybe 3 weeks from now, they're going to hear something. Or they've got a friend who says, oh, my gosh, they just found a nodule on my thyroid. And you'll say, oh, I heard something about that. Sometimes food has something to do with that. Really? Yeah, yeah.
Now,
you know,
here's why do you think, Dr. O'Brien, that particular thing you just mentioned, nodules on people's thyroids, is becoming so prevalent? So many of my patients are coming in saying that was found on a sonogram, But yes. They were told, don't do anything, just watch and wait. But what is right. that about?
Well, you know, the wait and see attitude, what are they waiting for? They're waiting for it to get bad enough that they can cut it out. That's what the wait and see attitude is. You want now you may have a really good doctor and you love that doctor. If they give you a wait and see response, you add another doctor to your team that's more investigative. There's no need to fire that doctor. You may really like them, but they're not an investigator to look at why is this happening. So you find a functional medicine practitioner to look at why is that happening. Now, specific to your question, why are we having such problems with our thyroids nowadays? We have to go into a little bit as to what's the job of the thyroid. So to go into the topic of what's the job of the thyroid, I have to give you a couple of points. Hormones in our bloodstream are traveling through the bloodstream. Your bloodstream is just a highway. You know, there's lots of traffic on the highway. There's some trucks, there's some motorcycles, there's different kinds of cars, old cars, new cars, fast cars, slow cars, some are burning oil. There's just all kinds of stuff in your bloodstream. It's just a highway, and there's no lanes of traffic. Everything's bouncing around in there. You know, you think of it that way, it takes the mystery out of the blood. It's a highway, and if you were to stand over an overpass on a highway and you look at everything going by, zoom, 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 it's really hard to identify the difference between a Chevrolet and a Cadillac, you know, unless you really know this stuff. And that's why people get overwhelmed when doctors talk about blood tests. But, okay, so hormones are in the bloodstream. How do they get into the cell? You can have all the hormone you want in your bloodstream. If it doesn't get inside the cell, it's not going to have an effect. So how does it get inside the cells? On the outside of your cells, facing the bloodstream, you've got catcher's mitts, like the pitcher throws the ball to the catcher. Those catcher mitts are called receptor sites. So you've got receptor sites on the outside of your cell for thyroid hormone, for testosterone, for estrogen, for progesterone, for insulin. All these different hormones in the bloodstream get inside the cell because the cell will have a receptor site on it. So if there's no receptor site on the outside of the cell, the hormone can't get in. So the hormone has no effect on that cell. The hormone will have effects on the cells where there are receptor sites for that hormone. There are only two substances for which there are receptor sites on every cell of your body. Every single cell needs these two substances. What are they? One is vitamin D. Vitamin D is like in plants. When the sun shines on plants, it converts hormones in the plant to chlorophyll. That's why plants are green. Chlorophyll is the growth factor in plants. In humans, the growth factor is vitamin D. And sun converts hormones in our skin to vitamin D. Every cell in your body needs vitamin D. So that's why you can see there are thousands of studies where vitamin D may help with cardiovascular disease. It may help with cancer. It may help with autoimmune disease. It may help with attention deficit. It goes on and on and on. A really great site to learn more about vitamin D is vitamindcouncil.com. It's a group of scientists that for years now have been putting out accurate information to the general public, summarizing the research that they publish. Vitamindcouncil.com.
That's great information. Well, you know, we have to take a little break right here, and I want to remind our listeners that we are listening to Dr. Tom O'Brien, who is apparently, as I'm sure you know by now, a complete wealth of information, and we are reviewing his book, which is something you will want to get to be able to lead you on your journey to health and wellness, called The Autoimmune Fix. We're just going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we are going to continue our discussion with Dr. Tom. And you can find him at thedoctor.com. That's thedr.com. Or also theglutensummit.com. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-sized tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. In 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
And welcome back. Thank you so much for joining me. Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And we take you on an adventure in natural health and wellness every week right here on Progressive Radio Network. We also meet with you in person or online. For instance, we have classes that are CE certified for naturopathic physicians, nurses, midwives, acupuncturists, massage therapists, and nutritionists that get CE broker credits for taking our online classes. And we have many on-ground classes as well. For instance, gathering edible and medicinal wild plants in the field and making them into medicine. We have many of those coming up. Just look at the website, naturalnurse.com. And we also have Chinatown Herb Walks, where we meet in Chinatown, New York City, and we go around to various traditional Chinese medical centers, learning about herbs, reflexology, Chinese tea. We go to the Museum of Chinatown. It's sort of like a day of getting an herbal education in another country. So we have many of those coming up. You can check the website, naturalnurse.com, to sign up for the next Chinatown trip. They do always sell out, so don't wait on that one. Today we have as our guest Dr. Tom O'Brien. And Dr. O'Brien is internationally recognized and a leader specializing in the complications of celiac disease and non-celiac gluten sensitivity, as well as autoimmune disease. And we're talking about his new book, The Autoimmune Fix. He has been sharing lots of information with us. So welcome back once again to Natural Alternatives.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And I'll wrap up this thing about thyroid and why we're having so many thyroid problems.
Good. And so, then we'll move forward, because your book has wonderful sections like the problem of autoimmune disease and then the fix, which, of course, is, you know, what we want to do about it.
Yes, yes. So we were talking about receptor sites, and that vitamin D is one of the two substances for which there are receptor sites on every cell of your body. Every cell of your body needs vitamin D. The other substance is thyroid hormone. Every cell of your body needs thyroid hormone. Why is that? Because thyroid hormone is the thermostat on the wall in your home. You know, you turn the thermostat down at night in the wintertime, save fuel, everyone's asleep, you get the temperature down to 64, 66, whatever. And then it automatically turns on in the morning before you wake up and warm up the house again. In your body, that's called your metabolism. Thyroid hormone controls your metabolism. It's this thermostat on every cell of your body. So every cell needs thyroid hormone. Now, for those people, why do we have so many thyroid problems? There are many reasons for this, but one of the reasons is that there are three chemicals that are very prevalent in our food chain today, in our environment, that will bind onto thyroid receptor sites like the catcher's mitt, and they stay there. So thyroid hormone going by in the bloodstream can't get into the receptor site. Kind of like a pitcher throws a fastball to the catcher, but the catcher's got three baseballs in his glove. So the fastball bounces right out. The thyroid hormone can't get in your cell. So your cell gets a thyroid hormone insufficiency. And so you've got symptoms of low thyroid hormone. But you do a blood test, and the blood test says, no, your hormone levels are fine. It must be stress. No, there's plenty of hormone in the bloodstream, but it's not getting into the cells because the cells are plugged up. What are they plugged up with? The most common chemical, here's a question that we ask our patients, and so often they say yes. Mrs. Patient, if you're in an elevator of a hotel and the elevator door opens, can you tell right away the swimming pool's on that floor? Oh, yes. Gosh, I can smell it. And everyone else can't smell. Say, yeah, no, some people can, but other people, right. You're likely sensitive to chlorine. You're acute to chlorine. Chlorine binds on thyroid receptor sites. And where do we get more chlorine exposure than anywhere else? In your shower, the steam. You inhale the steam, the chlorine goes right through the lungs into the bloodstream. So you get large dosages of chlorine, which is not great for you. So what do? You get a chlorine shower filter. It's $50, and you put it on your shower. And so you reduce something that simple can reduce dramatically your exposure to chlorine. So I think that's a really good example of how people have to take a step back from the symptoms they have, because your symptoms may be cold hands and feet, hard to get up in the morning. You hit the snooze three or four times. Sometimes you wear socks to bed because you're chilled. It's thyroid, just feels sluggish, thyroid. But we have to take a step back from just looking at the symptom and drink three or four cups of coffee to keep going because you don't have the juice that you should have. Take a step back as you understand mechanisms that cause this kind of stuff. You get a chlorine shower filter and all of a sudden you're waking up in the morning a little more awake. You know, you've got a little more energy in your day. And we've seen many patients have that kind of a result. So that's just an example of taking a step back from the symptoms to figure out where is it coming from, what's causing the inflammation. In this example, it's chlorine.
Well, that's great advice. Now, do you find that more conventional doctors are becoming aware and accepting research points like you're pointing out in terms of being the root cause of disease?
Oh, absolutely. You know, every single doctor goes through their education and wants to really help people be thrivingly healthy. Every doctor does, but they just get locked into an education system that deals with the acute care of trying to get rid of the symptoms or put a lid on the symptoms for people. But every doctor wants to help a person be healthier. And more doctors now are turning to functional medicine than ever before. Our courses are constantly sold out. We have courses all over the world now where we'll have 200, 300 doctors in a room and walk them through this new way of thinking where we're taking a step back from looking at the symptoms and asking the question, what caused these symptoms? What's the mechanism that's been going on for a while, killing off your tissue or damaging tissue, that eventually produce the symptoms that people come in with? And more doctors want to know this information.
Now, you are certainly well known as a specialist in what we'll call gluten sensitivity. Some people, you know, it's referred to as so many things. And what is the difference between wheat allergy, gluten sensitivity, gluten intolerance, and celiac disease?
Yes, okay. Two topics. First, what is gluten? The rule is gluten is not bad for you. Bad gluten is bad for you. Gluten is a family of proteins that's in many different grains. It's in corn, it's in rice, it's in wheat, rye, barley, quinoa. Many different grains have gluten in it. But there's a family of gluten proteins in wheat, rye, and barley that are the problem for people. So we really shouldn't use the word gluten sensitivity. We should use the word wheat-related disorders or rye or barley, wheat, rye, barley-related disorders, if the food's causing a problem for you. A wheat allergy, Mrs. Patient, your immune system is the armed forces in your body. There's an Army, an Air Force, a Marines, a Coast Guard, a Navy, IgA, IgG, IgE, IgM, white blood cells. There's different branches of the immune system. They're all there to protect you. So when one branch of the immune system called IgE, when that branch of the immune system gets activated, you get what are called histamine reactions. And they can be really, really serious. That's like a peanut allergy where a child can stop breathing. That's an IgE reaction. That was the first immune test that came into being back in the 1950s. And it helped so many people. Doctors said, well, look at this test. Look, it's telling us that there's a problem with this food. Oh, that's really interesting. That a whole subspecialty of medicine developed around that one type of immune response called IgE. That subspecialty of medicine is called allergists. And you go to an allergist and they do skin pricks on your back looking to see if you have a particular reaction to different foods and pollen and dust and things. They're looking for an IgE reaction. That's the Air Force. Really important to look for that. However, if that comes back negative, you do a skin prick test, it comes back negative, it doesn't mean it's okay to eat the food that they tested. And many allergists say, no, see, you're fine with wheat here. See, the test is negative. You're fine. All it tells you is that the Air Force hasn't been called out. What about the Army? That's called IgG. Or what about the Marines, the Special Forces? That's called IgA. But many doctors only check one branch of the armed forces and then come to the conclusion that the food or the substance is okay when they really should be checking many different branches of the armed forces. So an allergy is when you have an IgE reaction. A sensitivity is when you have an immune reaction that somehow it includes IgE, but just that your immune system is reacting. It's sensitive to that particular food. A intolerance means that you don't make the enzymes to break down that food. And everybody's heard of lactose intolerance. And when you take lactase enzymes, then many doctors say it's okay to have the milk because you're breaking down the lactose. That's an intolerance. So that's a kind of a general breakdown of those areas for you.
Well, right. And it's sort of a spectrum of sensitivity to something that, you know, could be life-threatening depending on the person's condition. But it is amazing how many people who never suspected it are gluten sensitive. And I know with my patients, I'll usually have them do a gluten-restricted diet before they even ever come in. And it's absolutely amazing how many people feel so much better, less skin rashes, less headaches, less joint pain, because so often that is one of the factors that stimulates an inflammatory response.
You're absolutely right. It's a very common factor that does that, very, very common. What we see clinically in practice is that when you do the right type of tests, the comprehensive test, Army, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, when you do the right type of tests, we find somewhere between 6 to 7 out of every 10 people we check come back and say, look, your immune system says you got a problem here. Well, I feel fine, doctor. But, okay, I understand you feel fine. That's like the test that you've just done, Mrs. Patient. It's like there's two ways to measure the temperature on the engine, on the dashboard of your car. Some cars have a hot light that comes on. Your hot light comes on, you've got to pull over. You're about to blow up the engine. Other cars have a temperature gauge, and it slowly starts to climb, and it gets into the red zone, but it's just barely in the red zone. That's what happens when you do a test result that says you got a problem, but you say you feel fine. You're just stepping into the red zone. You've crossed the line. The antibodies are elevated, but you haven't caused so much damage yet that your engine's about to explode. You're going to get psoriasis, you know, or you got skin problems, or you got headaches, or you have miscarriages. That's when the engine's overheating and it's about to explode, is when you have symptoms. The goal for all of us who want to be healthy is that you want to identify how are you climbing into the red zone here?
Right. So it's different for each person. Now, in your book, The Autoimmune Fix, how do you think the information in there really, really can help individuals?
Oh, thank you for asking that question. I personally think it's critically important that everyone that wants to be healthy for themselves and their families read this book. Not because I wrote it, but because it's 30 years of accumulated studies. And my goal here is to give you the big kahuna picture of where these diseases come from. And when you can identify and you read, they say, I didn't know that. Well, I didn't know that. Well, that's really cool. I didn't know that. Because as you learn this stuff, you start asking more relevant questions as to how to be healthy. You don't accept the party line anymore. Here's an example. This is in Mexico City where these studies were done, but the same thing could be done in many different cities around the world. First, in the early 2000s, they used dogs, and they found that every single dog that they checked after a dog passed, and they did autopsies on the dogs, every single dog had Alzheimer's, markers of Alzheimer's in their brains, every single dog. Since then, they've got blood tests now that they can do, and the blood tests show now every single child in Mexico City has evidence of early Alzheimer's. Every child. And Dr. Bredesen, who I talked about earlier, refers to, there's 5 different types of Alzheimer's. One of them is inhalation Alzheimer's, that it's the toxic crud in the air that we're breathing that goes right through our permeable lungs into the bloodstream, straight up to the brain, gasoline on the fire causing the inflammation, killing off brain cells that eventually starts producing symptoms. So when you get this bigger picture, you start asking, well, what can I do? And I give you so many pearls in the book. For example, you live in a city like New York City or L.A. or wherever you might live. You need an air filter in your home because you spend at least a quarter to a third of your life there in the bedroom sleeping. You need an air filtration system so that at least once in a while you're breathing the purest air you possibly can. And you're slowing down the progression of this. You aren't being exposed to as much of this toxic crud. You want to know how bad your air is? Go to a nice car wash, you know, where the guys have the Windex bottles on their hip. They're squirting your windows, you know, after the cars come out of the car wash, and they wipe it all down so it's spick and span clean. Park it on the street. 6 hours later, go outside and rub your hand across the windshield. That film on your hands, that's what you're breathing. Every single day, you're breathing that particulate matter. It's bad now. I mean, it's really bad.
And it's interesting that the environmental laws seem to be moving in the opposite direction to allow much more particulate matter into the air. Well, we need to take a one-minute break right here, or so, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Dr. Tom O'Brien about his book, The Autoimmune Fix. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Stay tuned for more cutting-edge viewpoints on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. I am Karen Hartglass, the host of It's All About Food. Join me every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, or catch all of my shows in the archives. You can find my archive programs at the Progressive Radio Network website, or you can call my personal archive phone number to hear the most recent 5 episodes of It's All About Food. Here's the number, 1-701-719-0885. Here it is again, 1-701-719-0885. Learn about how we can solve many of the world's problems today and do it deliciously here on It's All About Food.
Hi, I'm David Crow, host of The Infectious Myth, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time here on PRN.FM. I love science the way it should be practiced, but a lot of modern science is corrupted by financial interests and serves a master other than the public good. Myths continue to be constructed around viruses, vaccines, forensics, and pharmaceutical drugs. People are dying and ending up in jail because of them. Listen to me as I deconstruct the myths that those who call themselves scientists weave, or when I wander into social and political topics. If you're new to the show, check out our past episodes at infectiousmyth.podbean.com.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from progressive voices.
And welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We love to hear from you. Go to naturalnurse.com, leave us some comments, or Facebook The Natural Nurse, and we can bring you the information you want to hear. Today we have as our guest Dr. Tom O'Brien, who has a long history in the field of functional medicine, and we're talking about his new book, The Autoimmune Fix. You can find Dr. Tom at thedoctor.com, that's thedr.com, that's an easy one to remember, or theglutensummit.com. And thank you so much for being our guest today, Doctor. Now, there's so many things that can be helped by finding out this information. I know in your book, you know, sometimes people do have to change what they're doing, change what they're eating. You already talked about something like a shower filter to get at chlorine from the shower. I have that on all my showers, certainly. And you're talking about an air filter. You know, all these things can make a big difference in the amount of assault that someone is getting to their immune system.
That's very true. You know, for the listeners, for you people listening to this, thank you so much for listening. What we all need to do is to take a step back to get a big picture and recognize how poor our health care is today. The World Health Organization consistently ranks the United States number one in the world in healthcare technology. Consistently, we're number one. We're the very best in the technology. And for the last 5 years, we've been ranked in the bottom five of all industrialized countries for healthcare results. What you hear and what you experience as a family in terms of healthcare is all preordained. We're guided down a path that is not effective. It makes billions of dollars for the pharmaceutical and the insurance industries, but it's not effective for health. For the first time in the history of the human species, children born today have a shorter projected lifespan than their parents. This was in the New England Journal of Medicine, that they're going to get sick at earlier ages, get diagnosed at earlier ages with a disease, and die at an earlier age than when their parents die. We have to wake up. We have to be able to take a step back to get a big picture. It's overwhelming. So I need to tell all of you, you're going to be overwhelmed when you read my book. There is no way around it. It's like, wake up. You've got to wake up. And when you get this, and here's how you get it. If you do this, you'll be really successful with all the little things to do for you and your kids or your parents, all the little. But here's how you get successful. You allocate 1 hour a week, just 1 hour a week, Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock after dinner, Sunday mornings with the morning coffee, you know, whenever it is, but 1 hour a week. And you're going to read a little more about this whole topic of the big picture in healthcare. You'll read my book. You'll say, oh, my God, that's just overwhelming. There's so much stuff there. You'll go back and you'll read a few pages and just think about it or look a little more on one topic, like chlorine. You'll say, well, I'm not sure I believe this guy, so I'm going to research this further. And there's plenty of studies in my book for you to look at and the links to get them and all that. 1 hour a week. And in 6 months, you have really dialed this down. You've got the big picture where you realize you have to be your own advocate for you and your family. You can't believe what's on television and the radio. You listen to shows like this, you get these little pearls of information, but now you'll have a big picture concept to hold these pearls in, so you're not like the dog chasing its tail, always looking for the next best thing. What's going to make me feel happier? You know, always just chasing the tail of symptoms. You'll have a bigger picture overview if you give it 1 hour a week. The book is called The Autoimmune Fix. It's 35 years of study on this topic of what's the big kahuna of where disease comes from. And it's overwhelming. You'll be overwhelmed. That's okay. You accept it because you're going to be patient with yourself and allow just 1 hour a week to this. And be patient. You don't have to get all this in one day and try and remember it. You'll remember the bullet points. And then you'll go back in 3 months and, there it is. Yeah. And then you'll remember it again. 1 hour a week. That's how you can be successful and change the course of your health.
And that's the thing, because we have seen so many thousands of people just get well when they were on a path and told they'd have to stay on their medications the rest of their life. There was no way to ever really feel better. Just moderating symptoms by suppressive medications, that's all not true.
I agree. Sometimes the medications are necessary, absolutely necessary. You need the drugs, you take them. But you also ask the question, why do I have high blood pressure? Why do I have high cholesterol? You think cholesterol is a problem? Really? The test to see if you have a risk of cardiovascular disease for most everyone in the country is to look at your cholesterol and your good and bad cholesterol. That test is 50 years old. And the studies tell us that for actually 50% of the people that die of a massive heart attack, 50% of them don't have high cholesterol.
Right. There's very little relationship. That's true.
That's right. But that's all your doctor is checking is high cholesterol. It's real important to check for high cholesterol, but there are other things also to test for the other 50% of people to prevent them from dying of a heart attack. And you think it's good and bad cholesterol, the LDL is bad cholesterol? No, it's not. It's not. It's the raw material that all your hormones come from. Estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, melatonin, serotonin, insulin, they all come from cholesterol. They come from the LDL cholesterol. It's not a bad cholesterol. What happens with the bad fats we eat and the inflammation, it turns some of these fats into bad cholesterol. That's called oxidative LDLs. But LDLs themselves, the cholesterol is not a problem. You have high cholesterol? Likely. Well, your stress hormones require cholesterol. It's the raw material. Cholesterol is raw material for all your stress hormones. You're under stress? You need more cholesterol to make more stress hormones to deal with the stress. You live in New York City? You need more, or, you know, you need more cholesterol to make stress hormones to deal with the stress. It's not that it's bad for you. So we have to just ask the question, why is this happening? Where is it coming from? Excuse me. That's
so true. And then you can initiate changes and then use the doctor to help you monitor changes. You talk in the book so much about different foods, elimination diets, starting with wheat, of course. That's one that you've studied so well and which has an amazing turnaround. You know, people feel threatened. Like, what are they going to eat if they're used to jelly donuts for breakfast and sandwiches for lunch and macaroni and cheese for dinner?
That's a really good point. You know, people feel threatened because they eat a certain way. How am I not going to have my jelly donuts for breakfast and macaroni and cheese for dinner? That's a very valid point. You give yourself kindness and patience. You allow yourself months. All right, I'm going to transition. I'm going to learn something else I can have for breakfast one day a week or 2 days a week. And you learn what something healthy is. You learn how to make a smoothie. It's the best thing you could do is get a blender and look at the healthy stuff to put in a blender, you know, to start your day with. But be kind to yourself. It's not that you have to throw out all the jelly donuts right away. God, I never thought I'd say that. But it's true. It's true. You have to be kind to yourself. And if you have to transition over a few months, you transition. But you take ownership that, you know, I really want a different result than the result I currently have. So I have to change something. I mean, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing, expecting a different result.
Oh, so right. So right.
Yeah.
This can be such a guide, though, looking through the autoimmune fix. And like you said, making one change at a time. You even have an entire chapter called transition, where you maybe can't do all of it at once, but you do one thing, and then the next week or so do another thing, and you start to really feel better. That's the exciting part about doing functional interventions.
That's exactly right. You know, the book is set up so that you can be successful as long as you're patient with yourself and don't think you're supposed to have it perfect all at once. That's why I say this 1 hour a week for 6 months. As long as you're patient, you know, you have a child that was diagnosed with attention deficit and they want to put them on Ritalin. If you have to, you give them the Ritalin. But in the same time, you look at, wait a minute, where's the inflammation coming from that's causing all this? And the doctors don't know, or they would tell you. You read the book and then you start to understand it. You say, okay, so I'm going to transition my family to a healthier way of eating. And then you start the process. It's going to take you months. It's okay if it takes you months.
I think we're out of time, doctor. So we're going to sign off right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Check out the book, The Autoimmune Fix by Dr. Tom O'Brien at doctor.com, thedr.com. And get in touch at naturalnurse.com anytime. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.